You're listening to Hillary Simply, and I'm your host, Hillary. In the words of Albert Einstein, I have no special talents. I'm just passionately curious. So let's get curious, unpopular, and honest on endless topics together. 3, 2, 1. Hey, Shrey. Technical difficulties. How are you? Oh my
God. Good. How are you?
I'm so good. And you got a new puppy, I see.
She is very obnoxious. She's currently got a shoe in her mouth.
I hope it's not a shoe that you really love.
She's not entertaining at all. Here, I'll show you. Come here. Come here. Say hi.
Oh, she's so... What kind of dog?
She's a half German Shepherd and half Husky.
Oh my gosh.
So we have our Husky, our white one, and we've been trying to get a companion. We tried to get the other companion and... That didn't work out that well because she got mad. And so we had to get a puppy with the kids and the dog.
And they love it. Speaking of kids, I'm super stoked to have you on. What are you, mom of six now?
Yep, six.
Oh my gosh. It's like yours, mine, and ours. So there's a couple reasons for anybody listening that I wanted to have Shrey on. And one of them is this thing, like this yours, mine, and ours, and these six kids and how you do it all. And you just moved to Texas. Well, I'm super jealous. I think I'll end up living there at some point in my life, but here we are.
We love it.
And then also you've gone through some trauma with your kids. And so I think that it's really important that people know that, mental health is truly a thing, and just hearing your experience, might support somebody else who's gone through something similar. As rare as it might be, right?
I hope so. You know, that's, I was not, I waited way too long to make changes that I needed to as a domestic violence survivor. You get into a cycle of like toxicity, and it's really hard to leave, and you believe them, and then and really, honestly, all I want to do is help people like that have been in the situation or who are thinking about exiting that situation.
Yeah. I feel like last time I talked to you about this, you didn't necessarily, or at least you weren't saying it verbally, calling it like a domestic violence situation. So I'm going to stop right here and say that for the purposes of protecting your ex's family, we're not going to use his name.
Yeah.
And then... So can you explain to me a little bit, like what has shifted? What have you realized since your event? And we'll get into what the event was, but what have you realized? What are you doing different? Like how do you see that all unfolded into what you're now calling a domestic violence situation?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's really hard because like hindsight is 20/20, I guess you would start by saying, and the longer period of time that passes, the, I guess, more that you can take yourself out of the immediate situation and you can kind of actually like sit there and process everything. Domestic violence is a real thing. It can, obviously, we are seeing that it can be men and women at this point.
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to the... Amber Heard case? Holy crap.
Yes, that and then the Jada Smith thing like is insane.
Yeah.
It's not. So it's not only men and men to women, but we are seeing a lot of that happening. And it puts things in perspective for me because when I was in it, I very, very much like when I have a family or when I'm thinking about having a baby with somebody, when I marry somebody, I take it very seriously. It's not just this like, oh yeah, we're going to get married and we can get divorced and like child support, whatever. Like that was never my goal, is to have my children not have a father. Mm-hmm. And you tend to have this really good honeymoon phase. And I think everybody who has been in a domestic violence type of situation or any sort of abuse would say that, like, it's, you get stuck in the cycle and you really care for that person so much that like, when they come back and say sorry after they've hurt you already, that like you want to believe them because you care so much, but then also the fact that they're hurting you and traumatizing you is causing it to feel more exciting or romantic. And that is where that whole cycle, I think, begins, is like the endorphins that you get when you're in the whole honeymoon phase, and it never seems like it ends because you're constantly going through it because you're getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And then they're apologizing, and then they love you, and they will never do it again. And then everything's amazing, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, flowers and butterflies. Then they hurt you again because either they're toxic or bored or what have you, or they had problems with being the way that they were raised, or, you know, addiction and alcohol issues. So there's several different reasons, but I think that what I've learned a lot is, or I guess what I would tell other people is, like, if you know that you're in that cycle, like, get out, because I never thought that anything like what happened would have happened. And I never thought that that person was capable of it. Honestly, you know?
Yeah. So when you say, I know you've kind of broadly labeled it as a domestic violence situation, like, what do you mean? What was, if you don't mind sharing, what was happening?
So, domestic violence can, for me, and my opinion, can take like a lot of forms. It can be in the form of money. And we had a lot of that going on. It can be the form of just the mental abuse, as far as like gaslighting and making you feel like you're not good enough, or like they put you on the pedestal and then have the toxic, like, they're still doing whatever they want. They tell you what you want to hear. Or also there's the abuse, and there have, he was not, I wouldn't say he was mostly physically abusive. There were a couple instances. I surely was not getting beaten up every night. However, there were times that we had pretty physical arguments, and I mean, it didn't happen all the time. Most of the abuse that I dealt with, or the situation that I dealt with, was the money control and the gaslighting and bribery, I guess. Bribery is also one of those kinds of domestic abuse mental things that you deal with in a relationship like that.
Bribery. Can you tell me? Sorry. I know general like domestic abuse, but like, what does that look like?
I mean, I'll go real raw for you, but it's like, if you allow me to drink tonight, you can go out with your friends. Oh. Like, he wasn't supposed to be drinking, right? Like, we all know that he was not a happy drinker all the time or whatever, but he would just try to get me out of the house. Or like, if he was on the beginning of starting to abuse pills again, he would try to get me out of the house. So like, I wouldn't know. So it was a reverse isolation, which is really weird. But he liked to be isolated, and he liked to do what he wanted to do, whether, you know, substance and stuff, at home. So he would tell me like, hey, you can go hang out with your friends, blah, 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 take care of the kids, which, you know, every wife is like, yeah, I'm going to take care of the kids, and I get to go out, and like, I don't have a curfew, and like, you know, we could have fun and whatever. But he would bribe me so that he could be home and be in a comfortable spot to, you know, lie to me, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, for my listeners listening, your ex dealt with, addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Alcohol and prescription painkillers. And it started from a very young age.
Yeah. So he was struggling with that. I feel like everybody who has been addicted at some point is always struggling with it, but he had gotten clean on more than one occasion. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was always something in the back of his mind. So it's not that weird for you to, you know.
Yeah. And he wasn't bad. I mean, he wasn't a bad person at all. He was really good when he was sober. And I think a lot of people will say that. And I think that's why a lot of people stay in these domestic relationships or domestic violence situations, is because they'll get sober, then they don't, then they get sober again. And, you know, you guys have heard a little bit about it with the Amber Heard thing. And I'm not saying that she's like, I think they were both toxic for each other, but you also, as a woman, if you're in that cycle or your spouse isn't in that cycle, then you're going to end up being toxic on both sides. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
So, okay. So you're dealing with, bribery and, using money against you, and some maybe more physical altercations between the two of you. And right. Then when did you decide to leave? Like, what was...
Yeah, I am not here to say that I was completely innocent in any of it. Like, I was also toxic. I was not the nicest person, especially when we were going through one of those cycles. But we had moved to Vegas for a year and things got really, really bad. And then there was an incident over Thanksgiving holiday, which Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays. I love Thanksgiving. And he got into some trouble with the law. He broke a lot of laws and he was facing quite a few felonies. So that was when I was like, I am going to leave. Like, I'm done. This is it.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. I'm like, I just can't, like, the whole felony thing. It was, and he was starting to become delusional when he was using his substances. So it wasn't just like, I'm going to sit here and like hang out and party and like have a good time and chill. It was like he was making up stories in his head. And so that was part of the Thanksgiving incident where he ended up getting arrested, calling me from jail on Thanksgiving. That was really awesome. And I was like, no, I can't. Like, this is not going to be good for any of us.
And like, are you saying like pill induced schizophrenia almost? Like, just.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I wonder if that's a thing. I should Google it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's when somebody like abuses, even alcohol can do it. I mean, alcohol did it for him a few occasions, but, it's, you just get delusional, and that kind of happens once you have caused some damage to like your brain because of the substance abuse, which like is why you see a lot of people who are drunks and then they like all of a sudden have these great fiasco stories, and they were, you know, this an emperor and, you know, whatever.
What? Like, either. Sorry, it's not funny, but
no, it's a thing. It like, that's a lot of homeless people deal with it a lot. Oh. But it causes damage, obviously, to your brain cells, and some people can deal with it and some people can't. And then sometimes people want to escape their reality, and it is a pretty common thing for like when people get pretty thick into addiction.
Now, can you know, also with protecting the privacy of the people that this happened to, would you give us a brief what happened in this scenario that he was facing these charges?
Yeah. So he was going to be driving down to go hunting with his family. He loved hunting. It was one of his passions. It made him super happy. And, he was driving down to Vegas to go hunting with his family. It wasn't uncommon for him to like all of our kids were born in the fall. It was not uncommon for him to like wait until they were born and then leave right after to go hunting. So it didn't, holidays, you know, I was used to it. He drove down and I could see like his card activity at every single gas station that he passed. And I was like, oh,
what did that signal to you?
Shooters. buying shots, alcohol at every stop.
Oh. Mm-hmm. How scary. How scary for him and the people on the road. Oh my God. Okay.
Well, this is where it gets really great, is that there were some people that were pulled over on the side of the road, and he decided that he was going to pretend to be a border agent and take their IDs. And he was super wasted. He broke into somebody's ranch. He stole a bunch of their stuff. And then he pulled over on the side of the road. And the police stopped him because the people who he had stopped pretending to be some border agent, called the cops on him. And so he got arrested for several felonies that evening.
Wow. So he was impersonating a police officer, essentially, breaking an NRE. And all because he was driving, just getting schnockered.
Yeah, he just got super wasted. And then he was trying to find his drug of choice. That's why he broke into the ranch. And then I don't know where he wanted to be a border agent. And he was when he was sober, he had started going through the process of applying and stuff like that. And I thought it would do really well for him because I thought it'd kind of give him more discipline and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I was totally supportive, but then he did that, and that just messed his chances up. And then you asked, so when did I figure out I was going to leave? So that was that time, right? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of people that are well, you stayed with him for a lot longer. And that's only because we hired a defense attorney, and the defense attorney said that basically a major factor in keeping him out of prison would be for him to have a family life.
I wonder how many people that happens to, where they're basically told that somebody who has messed up and honestly probably needs to be in jail, and maybe it would have done him really well if he actually had gone to jail or prison or whatever. I don't know the difference necessarily. Right. What a terrible thing to put on your spouse and your children, and in order for this to look better and for you to not go to prison, you should stay married.
That was the long and short of the conversation. And,
I mean, I get it. If your shit is falling apart and you rob people on the side of the road down to go hunting, and it's going to look really bad if your wife also leaves you with your children. But
right.
So how did you feel in that moment when they basically said that to you?
I was just hopeful that it would go as fast as possible so that we could figure out what the end result was going to be so that I could end up leaving. However, I was very financially dependent on his income. So leaving him was a very long thought out process that I had to really prepare myself to be super broke. If that makes any sense, a lot of people who are in these sort of situations, the reason they don't leave is because of the money situation. And I had passed the point of being too scared to feed my family, I guess.
Mm.
So it was
you felt like you were choosing between surviving and surviving mentally and surviving biologically, necessity wise.
Right. And I did say, I took the attorney's advice to heart, and I was going to stay until after everything went through the court system, which he was well aware of that. Even though he tried to pretend like he had no idea and that he was shocked, but he was well aware of the fact that things were not going to get better.
Well aware to the extent of his drug use, delusional again, right?
Ugh. Right. And he had, stop it, girlfriend. Sorry. So he had part of his probation stuff with the court, and his restrictions was that he could not drink, he couldn't use alcohol, and that he had to be going to like meetings, AA and or Narcotics Anonymous and counseling. So during the time where he's waiting for his sentencing and all of that, he was in these programs, and the programs really, they help, but I still like,
you were
he wanted to save the relationship, and I was like, it's not going to happen. And then, so there was an instance. So his sentencing was in June. I got my apartment and stuff in April. I was going to stay, like I said, but he started using drugs again, started drinking. And so I knew, and even though he was going to AA and all that. And so that's when I was like, I don't really care if the courts think that it's going to be prettier if you have a family. I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm not. And then that's where everything spiraled out of control.
Oh, it's getting juicy. So, okay. So April, you got your apartment and you're out, and like, what's the feeling? Are you like, oh my God, I'm free. Is the weight of the world been lifted off? Like, still, I'm sure you're co-parenting. How many kids? So you had one child from a previous relationship, and then how many did you have together?
We have three together.
Okay. And then now you have two step, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Six. Woo. Good for you. I know. Okay. So
18 to three.
Yeah. Wow. You're, God bless you, woman. God bless you. So at the time you're co-parenting, but how are you feeling? Like what?
I felt good. Stressed, very stressed. But good. It was good. I mean, it was really scary though, because after I left, he obviously did not take that very well. He was drinking and doing drugs, and I was still living a mentality that I owed him something, which I wish that I also did not feel like.
What did you feel like you owed him?
Just, I never wanted to take his kids from him. I never wanted to be like, no, you can't have the kids. Oh, I know you're drunk, so you can't have the kids. Like, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, even though, and that's kind of one of the toxic things, but even though I knew like it was off the rails. Yeah. So,
well, and I'm sure that's something that somebody in his position would use. Why are you taking my kids? You're a horrible person. Like,
right.
Even though in your mind, best interest of your children, you can't drop. You had an infant at the time, right? You can't drop them off with somebody who's drunk.
Right. Right. And it was hard though, because he like, sorry, I'm going to put the dog outside. No, do you want to pause or maybe just keep going?
You're good. Oh, look at her, right? You know, what's her name?
Yes. Charlie.
Charlie. I love Charlie. I wish you, my listeners could see it, and maybe I'll be able to post a video. Oh, so sweet. So you've moved out. And you're struggling yourself, first of all, financially, stress-wise. You've got four kids at home. You're like single momming it because you have a man who's struggling with abuse, like drug abuse and alcohol abuse. And you're wanting to be like a good mom and fair to him. And like, yes, I'm going to let you see your kids, but I also am not sometimes because of what you're doing. So I'm hearing you had this like inner guilt, inner struggle of like, okay, I want to be what's right for the kids and I want to do what's right for him too. And like you said, when he was good, he was good. When he was sober, he was a great dad.
Yeah.
Did you find that there was more and more times that you had to say no, as far as like how often he was?
No, because it happened, the incident happened fairly quickly after I left him, or after we separated, like after I actually moved out. So I moved out in May. I got my apartment in April, moved out in May, and then everything happened in August. And there were several times that I said no, that he couldn't see the kids. There were several times that I let him have the kids when I probably shouldn't have. But you know, it spiraled really out of control. And like, he didn't even look like the same person by the time everything happened. Like, he honestly, like his whole personal appearance was not, it was,
It wasn't him anymore.
Not somebody I ever knew. Yeah, ever. It was awful.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So like in the, okay, I'm gonna ask you a tough question. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Like you and I both know that you have nothing to do with that.
Oh yeah, I know.
But like, what was on your heart? Were you feeling like guilt or were you like, no, mm-mm?
I used to feel really guilty. I still have sometimes where I feel guilty, and like, as a mom, your whole goal is to protect your kids and things like that. And I feel like I was obviously in too much of a toxic cycle to realize that I was not protecting my kids. But I mean, you know, I can't go back and take anything back. Mm-hmm. All I can do is do my best. That's what I started doing when I left him in the first place, mm-hmm. is I was starting to break those cycles and those bad behaviors that I had, in order to move forward and make a healthier life for my kids and myself.
Yeah. Everybody. Okay. So between moving out and getting your apartment and the actual incident we're going to start talking about in a minute, did anything else like happen that would have been kind of a red flag for you? Or was it just this, you know, yes, you can have just the kids, but you can't. Okay.
Yeah. Just the normal. I mean, it was all just like the drinking and I mean, like, yeah. I mean, he was like basically homeless for a bit. And then he got an apartment or moved in with somebody like right before everything happened. But he would get hotel rooms and take the kids and stuff like that. And he paid me child support, which was good when he could pay it. So that was helpful. And then I think he tried to be more sober when he was going to have the kids. And then like, but I knew that when he did not have the kids, like he'd call me and all this, you know, yeah. All this, like, I know you're drunk. Like, please just stop calling me. Basically. I mean,
no, like, I mean, how long were you guys married? I don't remember.
We were married for 8 years. We had been married previously one time for like a little under a year. That's when he went to rehab and then I don't know. Then we got married. 8 years
total or about 9 years?
About 9 years.
About 9 years. Okay. So what do you think, if you had to put your finger on, obviously we'll never know, but what do you think like really triggered him and his drinking? I mean, I assume it's an inner conversation, but what do you think that inner conversation is?
Like in general, like in his life or just when?
Yeah. In his life.
I think that, you know, a lot of us like drinking, like adults like drinking, like I enjoy drinking. I can have a good time. Mm-hmm. For him, I think that he wanted to just deal with an overload of emotions and not, I don't think that he was ever comfortable being himself and he didn't know who that person was. Mm-hmm. So like he was kind of torn. He always would refer to himself as like the black sheep in his family, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, but he did not feel comfortable with that. So he always tried to make himself somebody that he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And those conflicting feelings, I think, would be because when he was who he like wanted to be, he was a decent human being. He was really good with the kids. Like when he was sober and he was like working on himself and all of that, he was good. I mean, he was a good person. I think, I mean, but then once he started drinking, like he just get all these conflicting feelings and he never like, he wanted like the negative attention. I think he was trained that way.
Do you think he thought he was more fun when he was drinking or using, or do you think it was truly to like numb the underlying feelings he had every day?
Probably a combination of both. Mm-hmm. Probably. I think he just never really felt like he was accepted as a person. Mm. Like, I feel like he had a hard time being like, here's who I am. This is who I'm going to be. And then
like it or like, not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure, but you know, that's my,
if you had to guess, I mean, somebody who's married to somebody else for 9 years, they have to have a general idea, I think.
Yeah. Right. I think.
Okay. So
I think he just didn't really feel accepted.
So now we're up to like maybe the week or the 48 hours, 24 hours before your event. What mm-hmm. happened? Here we go. Mic drop.
Well, so we hadn't had much interaction that week. And then it was a Saturday and I had to work and I was going to take the kids to the babysitter. And he was like, well, I am coming to Carson. I can come see the kids and I can babysit them while you're at work. And I was very uncomfortable with him being in my apartment by himself, but he's like, I'm literally just going to come up. I'm going to get them dressed. You can leave for work and then I'll take them to the park and then I'll drop them back off. He's like, I got a new place. So he was moving into this place in Yerington. And so he's like, I might move some of my stuff there and do some laundry. And then I'll just drop the kids back off. And I was like, okay, that's fine. It helped me out because then I didn't have to pay a babysitter. And he was supposed to have the kids that weekend, but he's like, well, I'm too busy, like, but I'll watch them for you while you're at work.
So this was kind of like his trade-off. Like, I can't watch him this weekend, but I'll take him today while you work.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Do you want me to just go through like the whole?
Yeah, let's go through the whole thing. And if I have any questions, I'll stop you.
Sure. So, I went to work and then he's like, oh, well, the kids are tired. Lila's not feeling good. She's got spots all over her body and like a fever. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, she's probably got the chicken pox and it's 3 o'clock and I'm at work and I'm like, I can't just leave right now. And I could tell that he was smashed. I could tell he was hammered. I was like, you're not even supposed to be there. You keep telling me, like giving me excuses of why you have to stay. So I was pretty upset. And
do you think was he using Lila as the excuse to stay?
He was used. No.
Like if she was sick, it would be okay that he stayed at your house.
Yeah. He wasn't going to leave anyway. There's, okay. I don't know what, like it was, my dog is freaking out. So then I am like on my way to drive home and I tried to leave work as early as I could, but I ended up leaving at 4 anyway, cause that's what time we were closing. And on my way home, I had been starting to date. So I called my boyfriend we weren't boyfriend and girlfriend at the time, but who's my husband now. And I was like, here's what's going on. He obviously knew kind of like the backstory and kind of like how things had been going. And he's like, he got real pissed at me. And he's like, well, if you were going to call the cops, you would have already done it. And I was like, and I am one of those challenge accepted people. So I was like, oh, really? Really? I was like, I'll call you back. So I called the cops and to meet me at the apartment because he was clearly smashed. He was being, the late husband was, he was being like really weird on the phone. He was like yelling at me. And I was like, I don't have the energy to deal with this anymore. Like he's in my apartment. He needs to get the heck out. Mm-hmm.
So you were looking for support to like remove him from your house so you could continue on and
right.
He was drunk. Were you afraid at that point? Like, were you nervous or were you like, oh, same shit, different day?
Same shit, different day.
Okay.
I mean, I was like, but at the same time, like,
you needed to do something different.
Yeah. Cause nothing was working. It was bad. I mean, it was just like, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you for an hour and a half so that you can leave my apartment. Like, I don't have the energy for that anymore. And that's basically what it was. And then Brad was getting like more and more concerned because of just the behaviors that were happening over time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I show up The cops go up to the door. He freaks out. He starts cursing out the cops. He's at this point has all three kids and he's asking for me. He's like, I just want her to come to the stoop. It was a second story building. And he's like, I just want her to come to the bottom.
How old were your kids at this point?
11 months, 11 months, almost two. No, 11 months, almost three and almost five.
Okay. And these three were his three. So your one from a previous was with dad. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. It was his weekend. So he had him. I could hear him screaming. So the cops came back over to me and they're like, hey, so he just wants to talk to you. Like, do you at this point feel comfortable going over there? And I was on the side of the apartment building and I was like, no, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. He just needs to leave. Just tell him to get in his truck and go. Mm-hmm. So they went back up and they said, she's not going to be speaking with you. You just need to get out of the apartment and get in your truck and go. And they were going to let him go and it was going to be fine. He decided that that was not what he wanted to do. He ended up slamming the door in the cop's face. He ended up yelling at them and all that. And it started to escalate. And he wouldn't let the kids out of the apartment because they were like, well, fine. If you want to stay here, that's fine. Just let the kids down. And he's like, nope, I'm not. Not until she comes up here. Not until she comes up here. And so the SWAT team showed up and they started negotiating with him and trying to get the kids to let the kids out of the apartment.
So at what point, I mean, when you say SWAT team came in and negotiation, my mind goes to, okay, hostage situation. At what point did the police go from, okay, this is just some guy who's really mad at his ex to, oh my God, hostage situation?
Yeah. They had made the request. There was two officers that showed up originally and they had made the request like for probably like 25 minutes for him to let the kids go. And he just kept screaming and screaming and screaming and slamming the door and saying that he's not going to let him out until I go to the stairs.
What was he screaming?
Profanities. It was F you, F this, these are my effing kids, blah, blah, blah. Like, I deserve to be here. She let me into the apartment this morning. I was like, oh, well, you were supposed to be gone, but whatever. He was like, I just want to see my effing wife, this and that. It was very loud and it was very like, he kept slamming the door and the kids were crying and you could hear it. I was outside and like on the side and it was probably about 25 minutes or so before the other officers requested backup. And then, yeah. So 45 minutes later after SWAT showed up and stuff is when he let the two older kids down. They didn't have any clothes on. It was very hot. They didn't have any shoes on. The neighbors downstairs, they had started barricading the street. The neighbors downstairs offered me food and snacks for them, for the two kids and Gatorade and water. And that was like the highlight of, I mean, I don't want to say embarrassing moments, but humbling moments, I guess. I'll change my idea on that. But humbling moments where you're like, my 11-month-old is in my apartment with my estranged ex-husband who is getting more and more violent. And then my mom showed up. So she was there to help me with the kids. My aunt showed up. She was there to help me with the kids. Two social workers, several highway patrol, Douglas County deputies, everybody and their mother was there. They closed off the streets on both sides and the news showed up. So that was really fun.
Did they evacuate your apartment?
They evacuated all. Yeah. There was like, I lived in on a street with a bunch of apartments and they evacuated all of the apartments around that street. And then he began shooting inside the apartment. And that was terrifying.
What, Oh, I just got the chills. Sorry. Okay. So we move into hostage situation. What got the older two out? Like what happened that he let them?
I'm not sure. They took my phone and so they were negotiating back and forth with him. And I have no idea why he let the other two down, but he kept the baby.
Okay. And the door just opened and those two came running out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The officers went halfway up the stairs and got them.
Okay. What did they say to you when they got out?
The kids.
Yeah.
They just said that their dad was very angry and yelling and that that it was really hot and they were really thirsty and they had no shoes on. So their feet were burning hot on the ground and like, why can't we go back home? I'm like, we're not going back up there. So that's fine.
Do you think that he was, based on what they said when they came down, do you think that he was keeping them more separated or at least busy while he was like yelling at the police officers and stuff? No,
not at all. And you could hear them. Like I could hear them when he would open the door and they would be crying and I could hear them. They're right there at the door. So I know that he didn't have them playing in their room while he was putting this whole thing on.
Okay. And then do you think he was, you said that he was drunk. Do you think he was getting drunker as they like it went on?
Yeah, he drank a whole Costco sized bottle of vodka. And also text messages have, revealed or have, he also had somebody stop by the house earlier that day and drop supplies off for him. Mm. Drugs, basically. Mm. So
what do you
think? He had somebody stop by and.
Can I ask what he was using at the time?
Just prescription painkillers. That was his like drug of choice. He dabbled in other things and like, I think there was like some coke and some other stuff, but like his main thing was prescription drugs. But a lot of times he would take whatever he could get.
Of course.
When he was on like a huge bender.
Yeah. That makes me so sad because they talk about the opioid epidemic being like crippling.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I mean, you think of drugs and when you think of like the worst thing out there, you're like heroin. And now I'm like, is it? It's like
it's not.
Fentanyl.
I mean, it
and
is
Oxycontin bad. And like, ugh, that just breaks my heart. Okay. So now the two kids are out. They're getting taken care of. You've got all this support out there for you. People you know, people you don't know. What's next?
So it was 5 hours of them negotiating with him. And I am getting more and more concerned about the fact that my baby's up there and he is firing shots. He started calling his family and
where was he firing into? Like what was
it? Was firing into the roof of the apartment. He shot out the window. But there was like 8 rounds that he shot during this 5 hour period of time. And I'm sitting outside hoping to goodness that it's not the baby. Every single time, like it was awful. So yeah, he was like mostly shooting into the roof and then out of the window. So 5 hours and it's starting to get dark now and you can tell that things have kind of stalled just the way the atmosphere was. And he had started calling his family and the officers knew that because I don't know how they knew it, but he either told them or one of his family members told him or something like that. Like, cause they were trying to call his family and tell them to like, can you help us de-escalate the situation? And so you could tell that things were stalled and the lead detective came up to me and he's like, things aren't going very well. He's like, it might get very loud. And I won't be able to tell you how things turn out until a bit later. So he's like, if you hear it get very loud, just know that your baby is going to go to the ambulance first, and we will make sure that she's okay before we release her to you. And so that is very terrifying when you hear the fact that like things are escalating and you're not going to know whether or not your baby's okay until an unspecified period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, like, did you have questions? Were you like, what the fuck? What do you mean by loud? Like what?
I knew exactly what they were talking about. And just because you could tell that it was just not going well. And there were, cause there was a couple times I went up and, you know, this is not my proudest moment, but it's my baby in there. There was a couple times I went up to the detectives and I was like, please just go in there. I don't give a shit what happens to him. Go in there and get my freaking baby. Like, or I'm going to have to, like, I was like, I can't. And they're like, we're going to negotiate him with, we will negotiate for as long as we have to. And that's, I was like, really, you're going to negotiate with basically at this time, I was like a terrorist, like you're going to sit there and hang out while she's in there, 11 months old, helpless, naked. I was very upset, but.
Well, I don't blame you. That's a, yeah. Yes, I probably would have felt the same way. So at any point did they ask you to go up there aside from the initial, when you first got there?
They wouldn't. He had brought guns and ammunition up to my apartment. And the plan is that I was never going to be able to leave. So as soon as they realized that it was that sort of aggressive situation, they made sure that I was not in view of the apartment.
So pausing for a moment, going back, before he even knew that police were going to show up at the door, he had brought guns and ammunition into your house. What do you think his plan, like if you had to speculate, of course, this is all speculation. We don't know. Maybe he was just in a state of mind where he carried that stuff around and was.
He wasn't allowed to. He was on probation.
Yeah. Well,
like basically view from the court, he wasn't like on probation, but I don't know necessarily if he would have been able to kill the kids. He 100% was going to take me out and then probably himself, but I don't know if he was able to kill me, if he would be able to kill the children. I don't want to say yes, because I would hope that he wouldn't, but that would be traumatizing in itself. Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like that could be very true, seeing as how he let them, you know, at least the older two kids out. He could have kept them and done whatever.
His plan was that if we were not together, then we weren't going to be together with anybody.
So it sounds like, I mean, based off of the guns going in previously, like premeditated, do you think he showed up that day knowing that that's, or do you think it kind of came to that throughout the day in the text of like, you need to leave. You're not supposed to be there.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know. I can't really even say like.
You could drive yourself crazy. Like,
my hope would be that he just got drunk and stupid and then decided like, you know, that he was sad and I feel bad that he was so broken up by this, but I gave him plenty of chances. It could have not ended like it did. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So the older two are out. It's now been 5 hours. Things are going to get loud. What's next?
Things got loud. It sounded like those war newscasts that you hear when they're showing, you know, news videos of
like bombs multiple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They flashbanged my apartment. Basically bomb. I mean, it's not a bomb, but it's very loud. And then all you heard was shooting for probably a good 30 seconds straight. And I was sitting at the time on like a lawn chair and I got in a little ball on the sidewalk on the concrete. Everybody was trying to talk to me. It felt like everybody was screaming. Well, everybody was screaming at first, and then it got really, really quiet. And then everybody was like trying to talk to me, and I was just in a ball on the ground because that's all I could do. Cause I knew like I, and my legs were going numb. I was just, that's the only thing that I could do to like not freak out. Everybody kept coming up to me, like even earlier during the night, like everybody kept coming up to me. Oh, you're so calm. You're so calm. How are you doing this? Like you're, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? So anyway, I got,
like, I'm not calm. I'm in survival mode, like very focused.
Yeah. So I was on the concrete, just in a little tiny ball, just hanging out. And, the social workers were great. Cause when that happened and I got in a ball on the floor, they're like, everybody was trying to come up to me, like my mom and my family, you know, and of course, right. Are you okay? Are you okay? Like, and they're like, get away from her. Just leave her alone. Just leave her alone. Just leave her alone. And one of the social workers, I don't even know how long of a time period I was on the ground for like that. I just, that's the only thing that I could do to like keep myself from, I don't know what, but one of the social workers very shortly after came and whispered in my ear that the baby was okay. So that was,
did you start bawling at that point?
I don't remember. I don't remember. I think I did. I don't know. I know my mom was crying and, I don't remember if I was. I do know that like after we got into the ambulance, her and I, and they wanted to just make sure that we went to the hospital so that she could be checked to make sure that like everything was fine. And she was very shocky. She was very like limp and like
lethargic.
Yeah. Like she was exhausted. She was very hot and, she's very calm, which I think is the shock, but they were worried about her hearing because she had several, gunfires going off in a tight contained area. And she ended up being fine. I mean, as far as I know, I haven't had her hearing checked, but she doesn't listen to me. So maybe she is deaf.
Oh, poor baby. This is optional listening.
You can definitely hear when a candy wrapper is opened. That's for sure. So, but no, I mean, and then it was crazy. They wouldn't tell me if he died or not. I had to assume, and they wouldn't tell me anything. And, but I do know that the negotiators had negotiated for him to put her in the car seat. And that was probably the life-saving grace for her, and the way that they could get in to save her, because he was supposed to put her car seat on the porch and then they were supposed to get her, and he was just gonna, like, I don't know, whatever he was gonna do to himself or pass out or what have you. He ended up saying no, and he said he told them before everything got loud, he told them, you're going to hear two shots. One's going to be for her and one's going to be for me. And then that's when they were like,
we're going.
And then he fired two shots. And then that's when it got loud.
Wow. Where were those shots fired? Do you even know? Not.
Well, it was obviously in the roof, I think, or out the window. I don't know.
You think it's like playing chicken or trying to bluff them, or?
I don't know. It's hard. I don't know. I think he was very miserable and just didn't quite have the, I don't think that he quite had the nerve to take himself out.
Got it. So you think your speculation, I'm going to call it, is that he wanted to be gone and this was his opportunity to not have to do it himself.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very, the things, like, I know people, you know, it's not my fault. It is embarrassing to an extent because, like, I always felt like I held myself to like a high, I never thought that I was going to be in this sort of situation. And I am embarrassed that somebody that I once cared for put some officers in a position where they were going to have to make decisions in their career that obviously they signed up for, but like, I know that
affects them.
That's not ideally what you want to do. You mm-hmm. do not want to kill a father. Mm-hmm. So I feel bad that they were put in that situation. I know that like they signed up for it, but you know, I mean, at the same time, it's sad that if he wanted to be gone, that he wanted to involve so many people in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he end up shooting at them when they came in?
Yeah. Okay. They shot him. He shot at them, I think, 2 times.
Did any of those police officers get hurt or?
No, thank goodness. I don't know even what I would do. I would have felt really super bad.
Yeah. Wow.
Victim guilt is a real thing. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've had to work through for a very long time, but you know, I've given myself a lot of time to just kind of like be okay feeling whatever I'm feeling, even if I know that it's irrational.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of us do that. We don't just feel how we feel. Like we want to talk ourselves out of it, or we want to blame or get angry or what, and instead just feel it, just own it. And then when you're done feeling it, then rationalize that it just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So he's now passed, or you don't mm-hmm. know that he's passed.
Yeah.
But you have an idea. What, mm-hmm. what transpires next? Like,
I stayed in a hotel for 2 weeks while they process the scene, because it's obviously a big deal when there's an officer involved shooting. Mm-hmm. My apartment was destroyed. The owner of the apartment building wanted me to replace the water heater that SWAT shot through when they came into my apartment, because the water heater was right there. And it's like $2,500. And at this point, I had no idea how I was going to feed myself or my kids. And pretty much the whole rest of the year was like a blur, but I ended up moving into an apartment downstairs. And then I ended up having victims against domestic violence help me formulate a letter to get out of my lease early, and to basically tell a cease and desist for the apartment owner to leave me alone on the $2,500 that they have homeowner's insurance for a reason, because renter's insurance wouldn't cover it because it wasn't
it's not your stuff.
It wasn't in my policy to cover something like that. It would fall on like the apartment owner. He's a real gem. Anyway, he's rude.
I can feel for him the fact that this is like, you know, an investment, and it's
right.
As much as you don't expect it, he doesn't expect that it's going to happen. But I feel like that's legitimately what your insurance is for. Like,
and he had to have the whole apartment redone with his insurance anyway, because there was holes in the wall and the, yeah. I mean, they had to tear out the floor, because the blood dripped to the bottom floor. It just went all underneath the linoleum. They had to tear out a whole bunch of stuff. And the sheriff's department, paid for my apartment to be cleaned. So the trauma cleanup was paid for by the sheriff's department, which was really great, because I don't know what I would do if I had to have stepped into that. And that was very fortunate for me.
I wonder.
And then I ended up
normal.
What
is that? Just normal? Like, is that part of?
Not everybody's so fortunate as to have the cleanup paid for.
Wow.
I know. I mean, it's very sad.
What do you do in that situation? Like,
there's a lady in Carson City that does trauma cleanup, and she works in Carson City, Reno, Lyon County. And so when people like get hit by cars, or if they commit suicide, you call her and you pay her to come in and process the scene. And she does it really safely. She's amazing. Her name's Tawny. And she owns Nobility Trauma Cleanup. And, she's very nice. And she's very like professional, extremely. I ended up, me and Brad ended up moving in together. We moved into a house. Luckily I was able to find like the most amazing landlord, and cause my credit was destroyed after all of that, because I wasn't sure how I was going to take care of my kids. And I let some bills just hang out for a while just to make sure that I could get everything going.
One, you're like, you've experienced this trauma. Like, I'm not even sure most people could like put pen to paper to write a check to pay things, let alone.
I was a mess. It was like an out of body experience for like almost a year, I feel like. So then me and Brad moved in together, and then we were able to save enough and take some money out of our retirement to buy a house together. And he proposed and we got married, and here we are, moved to Texas.
Woo woo. What took you to Texas?
The job market in Reno. We were in positions, both of us were in positions where we're kind of like in that middle area. So like there's the bottom like employees, and then there's like the CEOs, and we're in the middle, right? We're in like the middle management or the middle
blue
roles.
Collar. Yeah.
Yeah. And Reno is either the bottom or the top, and you can't get to the top without going through the middle. So we started applying different places, and we were looking at like Florida, Tennessee, Texas, just kind of putting our feelers out. Neither one of us had made the trek to like move like that before. And we ended up both getting job offers within the same week in Dallas. Well, Dallas Irving. So it's all the Metroplex. And it was right around Christmas. And so we listed our house and it sold in like 2 hours.
Wow. Holy cow. I mean, the market is hot here.
4 hours. It was crazy. And then
do you get like multiple offers too?
We didn't do a bidding war. Our first people came in over asking. So we were like, and they were family. I'm not trying to, I'm not greedy like that. Like we could have probably gotten a lot more, but
I just wanted to bless somebody else and move forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And then our offer got accepted on this house, for below asking.
Oh, I'm moving. It's happening.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. And we really love it here. It's really great. We love it way more than we thought we were going to. It's been really great. There's so much to do. And, you know, we weren't moving to like get away from Carson. I love Carson. I love Nevada. I love that area. You know, I do. And everybody's like, some people are like, oh, well, they'll be back. Okay. Well, we might be back, but I don't know. The more and more we stay here, like we love it so much. And, it's really fun. Like, getting to experience a whole lot of new things. So a lot's happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah. So do you feel
like three almost,
I was going to say I think it's been longer than that. Do you feel like that stigma of that event like follows you around? Either legitimately or in your mind?
I did for a while. Now I don't think it's very uncomfortable for people, but I tend to like, once I start talking to people as friends or whatever, I tend to just be like, okay, listen, I'm going to
don't Google me.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to just briefly go over this because it's a part of my history and I don't want it to come up and like shock you, or I don't want it to come up. Like, I just kind of am like, here's my brief overview. And then I give them like a 30-second snippet. So that like, because it's a difficult, like people ask questions and I understand that. I am naturally curious. I want to know everything. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody, I worked in banking, I was a branch, you know, I'm still in banking, but I was a branch banker, which means that I deal with like a lot of people's personal information, and a lot of people trust me. And I am also naturally curious. So if somebody's has situations, like they either have to tell me so that I can help them with their finances, or I'll ask the question. And so I know there's a lot of people around like me. And so I'm like, as soon as I get into that like friendship or where we're starting to have conversations, and then like people are like, well, those aren't Brad's kids. Like, where's your husband or where's your ex or whatever? And then, oh, are you guys going to have kids together? No, we're not going to have kids together. We have 6 kids. The 3, you know, they call him dad and he's their dad, but their dad's dead. And, you know, here's the story so that you don't have to wonder about it.
You're like, oh, I'll just put it all out there. What is
just whatever.
What's the weirdest or most inappropriate question you've ever been asked about it?
I don't think that I can't recall an inappropriate question except for like, I can't really recall like an inappropriate question. I tried for a long, I think basically like it was more weird when I'd be like, oh yeah, my late husband. And then people would be like, oh, how old are you? You're so young. And I'm like, I know they're prying, but I wasn't ready to talk about it. That's kind of why I go into just my, like, I'm just going to go out and say it, because like, they'd be like, so, you know, they do the leading thing instead of just asking. Being like, just tell me what happened, you know? Mm-hmm. But no, I don't think I can't recall a time when somebody's like blatantly like been completely inappropriate when asking a question. I have gotten a lot of questions, but not like inappropriate ones. I don't think I can recall, maybe.
And I feel like you're more of an open book anyway. So something that might really offend somebody else would probably just wash off your back. You're like, oh, I'll answer that. It's fine. What did it take for you? You seem like you're in a really good place in your life. So what did it take for you to get there? Like, have you sought counseling? Like, what have you done for you to kind of get through this? Cause that's a big trauma, not to mention the abuse in and of itself, but the actual event.
If I had to think about it, I've been given a lot of grace, and I took a lot of time. I did do some counseling. I've done some counseling. I definitely relied on drinking a little bit more than I should have for a bit, which, okay, I'm not mad about it. And then
you're human. Were talking about, it's numbing. I can't imagine that I wouldn't want to also numb myself. So it's got to be an urge that's really hard to battle.
Brad's been really good because he's just given me whatever time that I've needed and understood my feelings and my craziness. And so like he basically, I don't know why, it's probably abuse in itself, but he basically cared for me when I was a slug for an entire year and couldn't function, and you know, crying and then having all these conversations, really difficult conversations with the kids and things like that. But he gave me, I guess, the patience and the grace that I needed, and just kind of like for me to end up being able to work it out in my own head, I guess, and, you know, kind of deal with the processes. And so
what were some of the hard questions that your kids have like asked you that?
Well, it's real difficult to tell your kids what happened, because they're going to find out. Anthony, who's 12, Googled his name because they had a class assignment to like Google their family and all that. So that's cool. Teachers, shout out. Don't tell your kids in school to Google family names, please.
That's if the right stuff comes up even too. Like, what about all the people that have similar names? Next thing you know, your kid's going to think their uncle's like a serial killer or something because they have similar names. But
yeah.
So is that how he found out?
No, we had to tell him because the apartment kids all knew and he was older. We told the apartment kids not to tell any of the younger kids, but he was older and they were all asked. I mean, they asked questions to him about the situation and things like that. So we told him what had happened and he was old. He was age appropriate and we made it age appropriate. But then also telling like my almost 9-year-old Landon, his dad was his hero. And I don't know what came up. He had spent like a week just asking all these questions, like, so I remember this and this and this from, you know, the incident. Like, what, like, can you, what happened? What happened? What happened? What happened? And I was like, I've got to tell him.
So they knew so, that their dad had died that day, but they didn't really know how.
How or why or whatever. And we had just told him before that he was sick, you know, that he was really sick and he passed away. So, but then Aunt Landon went through like a whole week of just badgering us with questions. And so we made it as age appropriate as we possibly could. And yeah, but
what did he say?
So those are, I mean, there's a lot of difficult conversations, but you just kind of figure out how to do it. And
it's like talking to your kids about sex. I got to do that next. Not the same, but
I'm not ready for that. Okay. I just call him, go in the shower. Don't touch yourself in front of me.
I love you so much. My daughter I had to just sign the share form. And for those of you that don't live in Nevada, that's like the sexual education program. That's what they call it. And yeah. So we were talking about it. This
is going to be a no from me. They don't even have genitals as far as I'm concerned.
Just pretend. They're just like Barbie. There's nothing there.
Yep. Exactly. I'm like, stop. Don't involve other people. Just go take a shower.
So what did Landon say when you told, like when you officially came out and told this, like, was he crying? What, like, was he grateful?
Are you ready for this one?
Yeah. Oh.
So, oh my God, Brad almost cried. So the first question that he asked was Quinn okay? And I was like, oh, that's the hardest because, you know, you're telling him that how his dad passed away and his first question was being concerned about his sister.
Who was the baby at the time?
Yeah. Was she okay? And did he hurt her? And that was like a heartbreaker for me. I was like, I was so happy that was the question that he asked, but, that was like, it was the sweetest and saddest thing mm-hmm. that I probably have ever experienced.
How did you answer that? Because he didn't physically hurt her, but like,
we just said, yes, honey, she was okay. She's fine. He did not hurt her. And so then he lived his happy life after that. It was like, that was pretty much the end of the conversation. He was like, okay. And then, you know, he's so resilient. He's such a good kid. Well, we'll see when he's a teenager, but he's a really good kid. He's such a good boy.
He's like 12.
But
now.
Yeah, that was like, no, he's the almost 9-year-old.
Oh, okay. So he's 9. I was thinking 9 when it happened, but that makes more sense. So he would have been 6.
Oh. He was almost 5.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. He was almost 6, I guess. Yeah, he was almost 6. Yeah, because he started kindergarten that year. So he was almost 6.
Does he remember a lot?
No, the only thing that he remembers it being very hot and he had no shoes on and he remembers his feet were burning. Luckily, him and Lila got picked up by my cousin before everything got loud. So he remembers hearing gunshots. And then he remembers that during the daytime, that his dad had a pistol in his pocket while he was arguing with me on the phone.
Oh, what a blessing that they left. And Lila too, because she was 3, almost 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yep. Something like that. I don't even know anymore. I guess. Yeah. Almost 3. She was almost 3. And you know,
that's not an age that you usually remember a lot.
Like, no, she doesn't remember anything. And Quinn knows nothing at this point. She's very sensory sensitive. But that's pretty much the only thing that I've really seen so far as like any residual anything. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
What a blessing in such a crazy event. Now, have you talked to Lila about how her dad passed?
No, I'm not yet. I will, but for her and Quinn, like, I'll wait till they start asking questions. And then if they have the questions, but they see Brad as their dad. So, I mean, it's, we don't try to, like, there's pictures of my late husband with the kids. The kids know, can recognize him in pictures, except for Quinn. I don't think she can, but, like Lila can, she hasn't started asking any questions about it yet, but they consider Brad, like, especially the two girls are like
dad.
The dad that they know and the person who's been taking care of them since they were very tiny. So, so we'll just, I mean, we don't hide any of that from them or like try to erase the memory of their dad, but we don't try to like, sure. I'm not going to carry that trauma with these kids. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just love you. You're so amazing.
I don't know how you do it. I love you the most. I miss my hairstylist. I'm telling you that.
Let's do it. Well, it looks beautiful. So whoever's doing it is doing a good job.
I know. I got lucky. Oh, you know how it's, my it's hair's hard. Been a nightmare before.
What, if you had to sum up what you went through and offer advice to anybody that might be, have gone through something similar or be approaching a very unhealthy relationship, like what would you say?
I would just say that, these situations don't seem like they're ever going to happen to you where you're literally putting somebody that you care or cared about, is putting your children's life at risk. But I guarantee you 100% that it can happen. It has happened. And if somebody puts their hands on you, if somebody is using money or bribery or gaslighting, then, and you really want to make a change for yourself, then you need to just take those steps. You're never going to have the life that you want if you don't take the steps to make that life a reality for you. Yeah. They may love you, but they don't know what love is, and you deserve better.
Yeah. Well, and even if they love you, that doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't battling something bigger than that.
Right. Right. So. Exactly.
Do you know of any resources that you feel like you'd like to shout out here for that in particular? I mean, I know there's a domestic violence hotline, right?
Yeah, I never really use that, but the Advocates to End Domestic Violence are amazing. Nobility Trauma LLC, who does the crime scene or, you know, any sort of accident cleanup. Mm-hmm. They are amazing. There is a I don't remember the name of it, but there's a nonprofit attorney firm in Carson City that will help with divorces and filing paperwork and things like that. And there's also, I know in Carson City at the courthouse, they have Advocates to End Domestic Violence, and there's, you can get restraining orders there and stuff.
I looked up the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 800-799-7233. And you can even text them, text START to 88788. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they definitely, if you ever feel like you're in a situation, you definitely should. People have to tell you 100 million times to like leave the situation, but you're never going to leave until you're ready. But I would encourage all young women, mothers, non-mothers, anybody who is feeling like they're getting in sort of a toxic spiral to leave, no matter if it hurts, no matter if you're going to be broke, no matter if you are going to make hard choices, leave and stay. Like, do not go back. Just, it's not going to change.
So side question to that, then, with you saying that, do you feel like you had people in your corner that were like, you need to leave? Or do you feel like you were hiding it so much that nobody even knew?
No, a lot of people told me that I should leave and stay gone. And I went, I left several times and went back several times. And it was just the cycle. And I don't know. Hindsight is 2020. I didn't think that I was strong enough to do it. I did it. And then all this crazy stuff happened. And had I left earlier, I think that I could have avoided some heartache, but you know, it makes me who I am. And mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate that I have been as blessed as I have after everything happened.
Yeah. Now, like I'm throwing myself out here like 5-10 years, and let's say your kids listen to this. Like, what do you want them to know, all of them?
Just that I was weak at one point and I became strong so that I could make a better life for them. And I want to end, you know, generational trauma. I want to give them the life that they deserve to have. And I want them to know what a healthy relationship looks like.
Amen, sister. And it sounds like you are living what that healthy relationship is.
You're living, yeah. Living, I mean, marriage dream. Is always hard.
Of course.
There's all these things, but we are honestly like very good together. He's spoils the crap out of me. I'm a freaking diva now. It's disgusting.
I feel like when people say like a healthy relationship, they want it to be like butterflies and rainbows. And in my opinion, a healthy relationship is obviously lacks violence and abuse. But I would say that it shows both. It shows how conflict resolution and the arguing can and disagreement can be normal, but also shows all of the love and support of like after when things are beautiful.
Yeah.
So
thank
you so
That's
much
really good.
For talking to me today, Shrey. I want to acknowledge you for being brave and being willing to hop on here and talk to me and share your story. And I hope that my hope is that this reaches somebody that maybe is struggling in an abusive relationship and they decide to leave.
Yeah.
Or just let somebody else out there that maybe has been through something similar, that they're not alone. So thank you for sharing your story.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
I love you so much. I'll talk to you later.
I love you. I miss you.
I miss you too. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a comment or like. And as always, stay passionately curious.